pumpkins, costumes, pounds and pounds of candy. So just where did this tradition of Halloween come from, and how far back does the holiday go here in Michigan? Let's turn to our resident stateside historian for the answers. Bill Loomis, good to have you here.
Thanks, Cindy.
Well, you know, it strikes me that if you were one of the early settlers here on the Michigan frontier, the ones who, say, came in the early 1800s from, oh, let's say New England with that stern Protestant background, you would not be particularly inclined to be dressing up like a goblin or a witch.
Exactly.
So who brought Halloween to Michigan?
Yeah, it really came over with the Scottish and Irish immigrants, and they started coming over in the 1840s. The first mention of Halloween in the papers was in the 1860, really, when it started to become more popular.
So as these early settlers came over from Scotland and Ireland, what kind of traditions and ideas about Halloween did they bring?
It was basically a rural holiday. It was done in the country, and essentially people gathered around the hearth on Halloween night and told ghost stories and did simple games like roasting chestnuts in the fireplace and breaking open kale stalks and things like this was over in Scotland. Mm-hmm. To predict the future, young people would say, who's my true love and all that sort of thing. And when it came to Detroit, it basically was a repeat of that.
So this is what it was really about, and tied in, of course, with the church holiday.
Right.
Of All Souls Day and All Right. Saints Day.
That's right.
The idea that we had spirits about.
Yeah, there was all kinds of stuff like that on those creepy nights.
The games that you describe that they were playing, like picking raisins from the fire.
Yeah.
What was up with that?
Well, I don't know. I think there was some boredom that figured into some of these games. I don't know. But they did a lot of simple games that involved fruit and nuts and cakes and things like that. But also there was always a little element of danger in some of the games. They did one where they would spin an apple and there was a candle on the other end and you had to grab the apple without getting burned.
There's also something to do with herring.
Yeah, that was kind of a severe test. But a young lady had to eat a whole raw herring, bones and all, in 3 bites. And then she went to bed, and in her dream, she would see her true love.
I think it would be her culinary nightmare, actually.
Probably a fisherman or something.
Something.
I don't know.
That's pretty funny. How about the jack-o'-lantern?
Jack-o'-lanterns were popular even before that. There were talks of, you know, back in the turn of the century, even in New England, jack-o'-lanterns were around. And they weren't in Scotland. So they dealt mainly with kale and fall vegetables like cabbage. But pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns were carved right away, as well as other vegetables. It carved gourds and cabbages and all sorts of other things. It wasn't just pumpkins.
And I'd heard the Irish kind of brought that. They used to carve turnips even and
yep,
put them in the
right.
cottage
turnips
windows too.
So. That's right. Or they would carry them with candles in them and things like that.
I'm speaking with Bill Loomis as we go over some of the history of Halloween in Michigan. You write about the popularity. There was a spell of real popular activity with communicating with the dead through mediums in Michigan from about the latter 1800s to around 1920. And then it was so poignant when you explain why, that it tied in with the post-Civil War and post-World War I era where people had lost husbands and sons.
Right. It was just awful. I think death was much more prevalent. Not more prevalent, but it was more a part of life.
Yes.
People died younger. And so there was a more of a need maybe to communicate and kind of straighten out your life and how these people left things unfinished. So the Civil War was a huge rise in the interest in that, in seances and Ouija boards and telepathy and all kinds of things like that. Even hypnotism came around. Spirit photography was real popular. They were all, aside from a few things, they were all considered frauds eventually, but
right.
people had strong interest. And there's also much higher infant mortality. So it was very popular among women. It was considered actually progressive because at one point, several historians, in fact, Barbara Goldsmith in particular, said 10 million people considered themselves strong believers in this sort of activity in the United States alone. So it was a real popular, common thing to follow.
Now, the idea of trick or treat, as you point out, in these early days of the 20th century, there weren't any treats. There were just tricks. And I can tell you, my dad grew up in Ferndale in the 1920s, and I can remember him telling us how he and the boys would go out and, like, tip over outhouses. Ha, 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 ha.
Right.
But that was their idea of Halloween fun. So there was actually, as you described, some of the young folk really did misbehave badly.
Yeah, that was permitted, though. Somehow this mischievous boy cultural icon was allowed. So they did some pretty horrible things. One paper reported that kids had stretched almost invisible piano wire across the sidewalk, and when people went walking by, they would trip on the wire. One fellow broke his shoulder. It was, it could be pretty vicious, but most of it was soaping windows, but they would throw vegetables at people. They'd throw dried corn at cars, small things.
But then the costume idea, the begging, putting your costume on and going door to door, I was surprised that as I was doing it as a little girl in the 1950s, early 60s, we were kind of in the forefront. That was pretty new.
Yeah, that was pretty new. Up until World War II, kids didn't really trick or treat. There was a sugar shortage in World War II. It was rationed, and it was too expensive for people to give out candy to total strangers. So it wasn't really didn't really catch on until the 50s.
What made it catch on? What where did it all begin with? Let's send the kids out with their little pillowcases or their bags, and they go begging.
You know, that's a good question, but it appeared in shows like Ozzie and Harriet and other TV show, suddenly kids were trick-or-treating on the show, and from there on, it really took off.
Now, today, when you hear trick-or-treating, you go to the door, you see kids coming up like tiny Spider-Men,
yeah,
complete with their bulging foam biceps, I might add. But
right.
What kind of costumes, were they wearing costumes even before the trick-or-treating?
They were. The kids wore costumes back at the turn of the century, but they didn't go trick-or-treating. They just kind of dressed up and
pranced around and
caused mayhem.
Strung piano wire.
That's right.
What kind of costumes might we have
seen?
Well,
they were based on fairy tales. And then other just popular images like the little Dutch boy or girl. That was a popular one. But generally, it was a reflection of what they were reading at the time.
Okay. And you also pointed out it was considered rather fun to dress up as opposite sex.
Yeah. That was a tradition. Little boys and girls, like age 6 or 7, they would dress as girls, and the little girls dressed as boys. And the boys wore wigs, and they dressed in frilly dresses, and they would go around.
It was a hoot.
Yeah, that was fun.
Bill Loomis, special writer for the Detroit News. His piece on the history of Halloween in Michigan and Detroit appeared in last Sunday's Detroit News. Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cindy.